Hello, this is the Winfrey Show. We're coming to you live tonight, and waiting for Winfrey to show up. We just had another caller. Would you like to state your name, where you're calling from?
It's Winfrey showing up.
Oh, Winfrey showing up. Okay, Win. We have a few
Hi,
more
Winfrey.
Callers coming online. Would you also like to state your name, where you're calling from?
Hello, this is Terry from Dallas.
Oh, hello, Terry in Dallas. Anyone else like to state their name, what they're calling from?
Yeah, hi, it's Dave from Atlantic City.
Oh, hello, Dave from Atlantic City. Is John substituting for Hives, who is not in? Oh, hello, would you like to state your name, where you're calling from?
Hi, this is Deb in Oregon.
Hello, Deb from Oregon.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you, John, for doing this.
Sure.
I was just going to ask if that was John. Your voice kind of sounded right, but then a little bit different. So, wasn't sure.
It's me, yes.
he's been professional tonight.
Holy cow. Good evening, and welcome to the call. Would you like to state your name? Where are you calling from?
Carleen from Las Vegas.
Oh, Carleen from Las Vegas. Anyone else like to state their name, where they're calling from?
Huh?
Would anyone else like to state their name, where they're calling from?
Oh, Las Vegas, Nevada.
Okay, was that, you said Colleen?
Kylene, K-Y-L-E-N-E, or Kai.
Okay, hello. Hello, Colleen.
Hi.
Colleen, is this your first time on a Monday call?
No. It's just
know.
The first time in a while.
You don't know
another
John? Caller? Do you know John?
Huh?
You don't know John, right?
No, I haven't met John. Hello.
John from Las Vegas also, yes.
He's in Las Vegas too.
Oh, really? How cool.
Yeah, in case you need a gambling partner.
I don't gamble, actually. I don't drink, smoke, do drugs, or gamble. Nope. We got a bunch of other callers. Would you like to state your name, where you're calling from?
Yes, hi. It's Jane in Pennsylvania.
Hey, Jane from Pennsylvania. Hello. Anyone else like to state where they're calling from?
This is Don in Northern Ohio. Hi, everybody.
Oh.
Hi, Chris.
Another caller just called in. Would you like to state your name, where you're calling from?
This is Roger in Austin.
Oh, hello, Roger. We had another caller. Anyone else like to state their name, where you're calling from?
Hi, it's Michelle in Cambria.
Oh, hello, so Michelle from Cambria.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who would like to state their name, where they're calling from?
I think I see Terry. Terry, are you on the line?
No, this is Tony with Michigan.
Hi, Tony.
Hi.
Hi, Tony.
Hi. Hi, Terry.
Hi.
Hi, Terry.
Oh, Terry from Sedona. Hello, Terry.
Hi.
Oh, we have another call. Would you like to state your name? Where are you calling from?
Hi, this is Bonnie in California.
Oh, hello, Donnie from California.
Hi.
Welcome. Hi.
Hey, John, how's it going?
Okay, pretty good.
Very good.
Is there anyone else who'd like to state the name where we're calling from? Anyone we missed?
Hey, I'm just curious. How many of you have heard? Did you guys open my email tonight? I actually sent it out early.
I didn't hear it.
No.
Got it open right now.
Yeah, I looked at it.
Yes,
how many of you have heard me talk about the famous science fiction writer who was talking to the Elohim? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell us
how many,
more.
Is that Helen?
Is that who?
Tell us more.
Is the guy's name Philip?
No.
Oh.
How many of you never heard me talk about it?
I don't think I have.
Okay.
Good evening.
Go ahead, John. Go ahead, John.
Would you like to state your name, where you're calling from? But only if you want to.
This is Steve from West Palm Beach.
Hi, Steve.
Oh, Steve, welcome to the call.
Thank you.
Two more callers. State your name, where are you calling from?
It's Chris in Memphis.
Hello, Chris in Memphis. And there's one other caller. Would you like to state your name, where are you calling from? Call if you want to.
We're glad you're here.
Wait, it is Philip.
Oh, it is Philip, yes. Yeah. I didn't hear you say Philip. I thought you said another name.
I had forgotten his last name, but I remember Philip.
Philip Dick.
Right.
Is it Rick Kai with City?
Hi, Rick.
Hello, Rick.
Hi.
Welcome to the call, Rick.
All right. So let's get started.
All callers are muted and they can unmute themselves. This conference is being recorded.
This is January 30th, 2017. Wynn and Terry in Sedona and everybody everywhere. Terry, are you still unmuted?
Yeah. No.
Do you remember the Philip J. Dick story?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, this is kind of, it's not a replay, but I have done this topic before, and I always hate to do it because I start to cry. I get teary-eyed when I do it because it's so amazing. And hang on. And it was one of the first things I discovered that made me feel like I was legitimate. If you put yourself in my shoes when this all started, it was like I had this new relationship with Daphne, and it was like really difficult. And she suddenly started channeling on the famous road trip from L.A. to Portland, and this voice came through that said they were the Council of Elohim, and I didn't believe they were. I mean, I couldn't believe they were as big. Well, I didn't even know how big was, okay? I knew they were one of the names for God in the Old Testament, the name the Mormons used for God. And I said, so who's God? How do they work? You know, I'm kind of unrelenting in trying to figure things out. So thus began a series of questions and answer sessions, and it was like they couldn't be who they say they were. They would talk to somebody else. They wouldn't talk to me. I could not understand why that was happening. And even with my sister's healing, I said, okay, something's going on here. But I couldn't really, I said, what if some source on the other side is trying to trick me? Maybe they can heal my sister. Maybe that will help me defer to them. Maybe they're going to have all these expectations of me. Maybe they were the Anunnaki. I had studied just enough to know that the Elohim in the Bible was very likely the Anunnaki. And so I said to myself, I remember thinking, I'm not going to do anything here until I have some kind of experience where I'm sure they are who they said they are. They were. And I didn't know if I'd ever have that experience. And when I say didn't do anything, I didn't really want to put it out into the world or talk about it. I didn't even know how to talk about it. And then in 2003, I did something. I did one thing. And I put up a website. And I didn't know how to begin the website. But I called the website Conversations with My Girlfriend. And I left everyone anonymous. I didn't have anyone's name, including my own. I said I was the questionnaire, and there was Girlfriend X and Girlfriend Y. And I just posted some of the conversations I was having. And there was a link to that website, Conversations with My Girlfriend, that was in the Creator Guide book. But I let it lapse. And so now it goes to a porn site. And every so often I get an email from somebody that says, do you know that went to a porn site? And I can't really get it back without spending a lot of money to buy it back, because somebody bought it. But in any case, in 2003, then Terry is channeling, and I'm doing all this Googling of the word Elohim, and I'm trying to reference the source that I'm talking about with things that I find on the internet. And one of the things that just really blew me away was in the search for Elohim, there came up a journal page from the science fiction writer named Philip J. Dick. And Philip Dick lived in Berkeley. And he was probably in Berkeley at the same time I was there. And he was kind of a misfit of sorts. And apparently he did drugs. He did LSD, and he drank, and he kept a journal, and he wrote science fiction stories, and he was writing stories for a, in those days, I guess it was the 70s, there were these science fiction magazines that were being sold in supermarkets. The stories in them. I think one of them was called Amazing. Some of you might remember seeing it. So he was writing stories and eking out a living doing that. And in the meantime, he was fairly radical, withdrawn person. And he wrote this thing in his journal that had the story that, and he had the word Elohim in it. And I'm going to read it because this, that, let me see here. What he was saying was very much analogous to what I was getting, and also the Carla Ruckert raw material, but he used different words for the same things. Like he used the word pluriforms of God instead of wanderers or starseeds. And of course, at the time he wrote this, it's dated 1978. At the time he wrote it, those words weren't even, I don't believe, in existence. Carla Ruckert didn't do her sessions until 1981. And I don't know if there were any New Age people using the word starseeds or not. So he used the word pluriforms of God. And I never heard the word pluriform before, but I guess plura is like plural, multi-forms of God, similar to the idea that I sometimes say now that we are all an aspect of the one infinite creator. And when he died, which I don't have the date of his death, I think it was in the early 80s, when he died, all of these stories that he wrote for the science fiction magazines, not all of them, but many of them, became movies. And now, if I was good, I would have hit my mute button. I didn't get it in time. Excuse me. And you've probably heard of his movies. And his movies were really deep. And they actually became cult classics. Probably the first one, let me just see, I'm just looking them up. Let's see. Paranormal Experiences and Mental Health Issues. That's in Wikipedia. You can look him up. He was married 5 times. He died in 1982. His stories typically focus on the fragile nature of what is real and the construction of personal identities. His stories often become surreal fantasies as the main characters slowly discover that their everyday world is actually an illusion assembled by powerful external entities, vast political conspiracies, or the vicissitudes of an unreliable narrator. All of his work starts with the basic assumption that there cannot be one single objective reality. Everything is a matter of perception. The ground is liable to shift under your feet. A protagonist may find himself living out another person's dream, or he may enter a drug-induced state that actually makes better sense than the real world, or he may cross into a different universe completely. This is what his stories were about. And his one major theme was what constitutes the authentic human being, okay? In works such as Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep? Beings can appear totally human in every respect while lacking soul or compassion, while completely alien beings, such as in Glimmering and Galactic Pothealer, may be more humane and complex than their human peers. According to a 1975 interview, he wrote all of his books published before 1970 while on amphetamines. A Scanner Darkly was one of them. And some of his movies, let me just go down here, were Blade Runner, Total Recall, Screamers, Minority Report, that was directed by Steven Spielberg and starring Tom Cruise, and Total Recall. I said that. In any case, they'll probably come up with other movies about his stories, but this all happened after he died. He never got the credit of the success of his movies. And let me read here. I'll read a little bit, and I'll explain it as I go, because you can tell in the way he writes here how deep he was, actually, and his perspective of things. And I don't know if, in fact, you know, I looked at some of the other things he wrote. in his journal, and I haven't seen anything that was as powerful as this particular piece. And in fact, in some things, it seemed like he was relating to negative stuff. And in some of his movies, he talked about cloning. That was a theme. I think Blade Runner was cloning, or maybe Minority Report. And, you know, I wonder if he had some direct experience to know about that, because to my knowledge, from what I've come to learn, cloning was fairly in gear in the period of time that he was writing. Okay? So this is called exegesis. The belief that we are pluriforms of God voluntarily descended to this prison world, voluntarily losing our memory, identity, and supernatural powers, all of which can be regained through anamnesis, or, in parentheses, sometimes the mystical conjunction, is one of the most radical religious views known in the West. Okay, and what an opening statement, okay? The fact that we are pluriforms of God voluntarily, that's the important word there, voluntarily descended to this prison world, voluntarily losing our memory, our identity, and supernatural powers. And because we came, he didn't say this, this is me, we came from higher places. Most of the people that keep coming to these calls would fit the category of wanderers, and that the information, the understanding, and the connection wakes you up. And it doesn't happen for everybody. This is not like a popular point of view. And for many people, as some of you have learned, when you try to express the points of view that you're learning on these calls to other people, they're either not interested, they think it's impossible, or they think you're going off the deep end, okay? So it's not for everybody, but for the people that it's for, the people that have come into this realm from higher dimensions, subconsciously, you recognize it really quickly. So, it is regarded as the great blasphemy, this idea. Replications of the original sin mentioned in the first book of Adam and Eve and in Genesis. For this pride and aspiration, we are told by orthodoxy, orthodoxy religion, our original fallen exile and punishment are being taken from our home, the garden land, and put into the prison was inflicted on us. Okay, in other words, in a religious sense, from the point of view of traditional religion, he's saying that our state that we're in was inflicted on us. It never says voluntary. And then they wish to be equal to, like us, the Elohim say, and toss us down. Yet I have reason to believe that this, the great satanic blasphemy, is true. Now, I wonder why he calls it satanic. I guess because, I don't know why. First, we are here voluntarily. We did not sin, and we were not punished. We elected to descend. Why? To infuse the divine into the lowest strata of creation in order to halt its decomposing, the sinking of its lower realm. Okay, that's kind of amazing right there, that we were on the other side, we were in higher realms, and we volunteered to come here because this realm was decomposing. It was run by, as we've learned, it was run by the negative, and still is to a great extent. This points to a primordial crisis in creation in the total macrocosm. The yin form, now he refers to the I Ching here, and the I Ching is something that I had used and studied when I was younger, and I started to, for the first time, understand a little bit about how divination works. With the I Ching, you flip three coins six times, and you get a hexagram made up by a broken line or a solid line. And there's something about doing that that connects you to a higher hologram, similar to the tarot, where you can get indications of what's going on in the area of the universe that is the precursor to our realm. And if when I used to do it, it used to be very accurate, just as astrology is very accurate. And I haven't done the tarot, but I believe the tarot is a similar principle. It has to do with the universe is constantly reforming itself, and the energies in the universe are recreating this realm and recreating us, if we allow it, so that we can be in the moment. And the I Ching would give a reading on the moment. You could ask it a question, and it would read out of it, and it would read very... The thing that amazed me when I used to read the I Ching is not only was it accurate so often of the time, but it was wise. It was very, very wise, the depth of it. I was amazed at the wisdom. And I might make a note that the reason I stopped using it, the reason I stopped doing astrology, was that I was learning, the beginning stages of learning, the holograms above all of those things. And that my life was changing so quickly, and circumstances would change so quickly, that if I tried to stop it and read the I Ching, I would get kind of free, what's the word? I would adopt what the I Ching said, and I would project that into my life, and I was afraid that I would miss something that changed because I was still holding on to what the I Ching said yesterday, and that I was getting into the flow of the universe, particularly when I was traveling around the country, when things would change and recreate themselves every day. So he goes on, talks about the yin form 2, dark deterministic part, was splitting away from the yang or form 1 in conventional terms. Heaven, the upper realm, and earth, the lower realm, were separating. Carrying the lives within the lower realm away from their form 1 counterparts. This could be viewed as Godhead itself falling apart into its yin and yang two halves, with the lower form universe as God experienced physically in time and space. The solution was for the divine, the yang, light form one. Okay. So he calls it light form one and light form two. It's interesting. The Ra material calls it space-time. This realm, 3D, is space-time, and the higher realms are time-space. And he's talking about a similar idea here. With the lower form universe as God expressed physically in time and space. The solution was for the divine yang light form one to follow the lower realm down, permeating it, and thus reuniting the cosmos into one totality. And to do this, elements, in ancient terms, sparks of light, advanced, descended into the dark kingdom, the immutable prison world. Upon doing so, they shed, and they knew they would shed, their bright nature, their memory, their identity, their faculties, and powers, and fell under the dominion of the delusion that the dark kingdom is real, which when severed from the upper realm, it is not, i.e. the world we presently live in doesn't exist. There they have lived as prisoners of the master magician, lord of the dark realm, who poses as the creator and who may not know of the light, God, the true creator, his other half. But the light God and his pluriforms, the descending, invading sparks, have cunningly distributed clues in the dark realm to recall to the drugged and intoxicated sparks of light their true nature and mission and true source of home. So we're like a clue. What we do is like a clue for people to find and then say, hey, I relate to that. And I think what I'm going to do is I'm just going to unmute everybody for a moment and see if you're tracking this. Hang on a second.
All callers are unmuted.
Are you guys tracking?
Yes.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Oh, yeah.
Who said kind of?
Roger.
Roger, where did you get lost? Thanks for being honest.
Well, I'm not just lost. I'm just kind of boggled by the whole thing.
Okay. I mean, if I have it right, they're talking about you. Okay. And
that's
me.
That's what boggles me.
Yeah. Why are we so
that's
weird?
Little old me.
Yeah.
Well, hey, Wynn.
Huh?
Did you read that little book I emailed to you called The Enlightenment Part Zero?
That's Dharmananda. I looked at it, and I thought yes. It looked interesting. Dharmananda, you have no idea how difficult it is for me. People, every day, I'm getting 10, 15 things that people want me to look at. And it sometimes you know, then I have to get engaged and comment on it. And then I have to have a dialogue with the person. And I can't get everything done in a day. So I just have to defocus on a lot of stuff. So don't take it personally. You know, a few years ago, I would have read it by now. But right now, and I might get around to reading it. But tell me in your own words what you got out of it. But make it short.
Well, it's all about how we got here and, you know, how we forgot who we were and everything and came into this realm and put ourselves in these human bodies and lost our power because we forgot, you know, that we were spiritual beings.
So it's similar yeah. to what I'm reading,
yeah,
right?
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, tell people what it is because somebody will want to read it. Is it online for free?
Yeah, it's a PDF. I put an email out there, the link to it.
All right, if somebody sends me an email and wants to read it, I'll forward it to you, okay?
Yes.
What's it called? What's it called?
The Enlightenment Part Zero.
The Enlightenment Part Zero. And how did the people that wrote it come by their information? Did they tell you?
Well, they met the guy that talked about this, the lady did, mm-hmm. and she went and stayed with him at his place in Brazil, and told all this stuff.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So they met with a guy who was kind of a master, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
It's really good.
Okay, now, yeah. Let me go on and I'll read this. Let me
okay.
mute everybody again. Okay?
All callers are muted and they can unmute themselves.
Okay. They have lived as prisoners of the master magician, lord of the dark realm, who poses as the creator, and who may not know of the light god, the true creator, his other half. But the light god and its plural forms, the descending, invading sparks, have cunningly distributed clues in the dark realm to recall to the drugged and intoxicated sparks of light their true nature and mission and true source of home. Upon encountering these cryptic clues, the forgetful sparks of the upper realm, now prisoners in and of the lower realm, remember, regain their powers and faculties. And link back up link back up with the upper realm and the light god. They are the light god in pluriform, his way of invading the lower realm in disguise. The light god, the divine, has now crucially occupied critical stations in the sinking lower realm and begins the re-annexing of it back into the totality composed of both realms. The sinking ceases. The master magician is stripped of his autonomy and assimilated into the yang part of Godhead and its passive counterpart. And once more, there is one macrocosm ruled by the yang, or active creative light god, assisted by the now receptive yin dark side. Now, to me, that takes my breath away, because it so describes what we're doing, okay? And how we have broken through to this realization of who we are, and that, let me go on here. The divine has triumphed at all level. The prison is burst, and the vast light-filled garden kingdom restored as the home of all creatures. These now whole creatures composed equally of yin and yang are what I term homoplasmates. The yin part is home, as we know ourselves to be now only, and the light or yang part is the plasmate or energy part versus the physical part. Thus renewed and complete macrocosms mirroring the renewed and complete macrocosm are achieved. Now, you know what microcosm and macrocosm means? It's like in the universe, we are a microcosm of the universe, each of us. The blueprint for the entire, as I understand it, the blueprint of the entire universe is held within us. And, of course, we have separated from the macrocosm. So it's like we have the blueprint, but we haven't been able to connect with the macrocosm. And he's talking about the union of the microcosm and the macrocosm, okay? Reality is imparted to the otherwise irreal lower realm, and the upper realm now extends physically into the realm of matter. The integrity of the Godhead is restored, and its two halves function in harmony, and the primordial split or crisis is resolved and healed. Now, that hasn't happened, to my knowledge. I haven't seen it happen, but it does seem it's like a potential. It's a potential, and we're like, we are the pluriforms of light in this realm. And this is a view compounded of Zoroastrianism, Brahmanism, Gnosticism, and Taoism. The macro-microcosmos of Hermes Trismegistus and other mystery religions, and not very much of Orthodox Christianity. Christianity can be added if the pluriform microsparks of light are considered plural saviors or Christs, comprising a single mystical corpus that is distributed widely in time and space in the dark realm, but possessing only one psyche that is somehow also God, the yang or light God. Okay, now I'll see. I'm going to take that apart. He's saying that Orthodox Christianity does not embrace this concept. But Christianity can be added if the pluriform microsparks of light are considered plural saviors or Christs. And Jesus said, these things I do, you can do much more. So we all, he is saying, that we would all become saviors. But you know what? In this realm, when you talk about the idea of being a savior in this realm, it automatically leads to an ego trip. And that stops you from being that, because it's not an identity like, oh, I'm a savior in this realm. It's something that has to be actionable. You have to actually do things. And the saving of people, in the way Christianity speaks about it, the idea that, okay, somebody accepts Christ and now they're saved, I don't get that that is true. The saving has to do with sharing of the deepest love. And I know how that feels. I know when I come across someone and there is an openness to that and I can move into it. Now, it's not that not easy to bring about that. It has to kind of be in your face. And then oftentimes we have that opportunity, and I've had this in the past where I don't take the action. And I don't take the action because something in me says, I don't want to get involved. I mean, the person is all screwed up. Do I really want to? And sometimes I do get involved with people that I shouldn't get involved with, trying to help them, and I don't actually end up helping them. It takes a lot of wisdom to know and read how to do this, because you want to help somebody and you don't want to get caught up in their negativity. Although sometimes you have brief moments where you do end up getting caught up in their negativity, and you need to do that as part of saving them. And I don't like to use the word saving, because you don't save them, they save themselves. But they use you as a tool to open up, okay? So I'm not saying everything Philip Dick says is true, but that seems true to me. I mean, I can understand that. I have read the above cosmology over and find no fault in it. In fact, I am amazed. It is, in a sense, acosmic and certainly Gnostic. But the Taoist overlay is novel and pleasing. The Taoist overlay redeems it from flaws of conventional dualist religion and the problems therein. Instead of stressing moral aspects, i.e. good versus bad, it stresses epistemological, real versus irreal, which I can understand. The lower realm thinks not because it is corrupt or evil or somehow is rebelled, but because, as shown in the hexagram 12, it is the nature of yin think, as it is the nature of yang to rise. Now, this is stuff that is pretty tricky, and some people may not like this. And I'm not saying it's true. You can think about it, but he's saying that yin is the feminine, okay? And yang is the masculine. Yin is receptive. Yang is thrusting. And I am sure there are people that would immediately attack the idea that it's the nature of yin to sink, as it is the nature of yang to rise. But where the attack falls apart is that all of us have yin and yang inside of us, whether you're a male or a female, and that at some level we have to integrate the yin and the yang inside of us to a certain extent to become enlightened, because there is our physical bodies and there are our energy bodies. And you used to be able to say, if you're a male, you're always going to be a male, and if you're a female, you're always going to be a female physical body. But even that changes these days with all the transgender stuff. But in general, that's true. But each of us has the ability to access more energies than we do, to access our feminine side, our yin side, and to access our yang side. And in a sense, the whole dilemma of what's happening on our planet with the yin falling away from the yang, or the dark separating out, is going on inside us, the yin inside us, to reintegrate the yin and the yang, to bring them together. So when you do that, you no longer care whether you're dominating or you're receiving, receptive. Either one is okay, depending on the circumstance. And you can flow into a situation and become what's right for the situation. You're no longer bound by your own energy form of yang, or male or female, okay? So here, and he says he doesn't like using good or bad. Of course, in religion, morality, good and bad, this is bad, then you judge bad, and he's evil, and all that stuff, okay? And yang must assimilate yin to keep the totality intact. That's just what I said. Yang must renounce its natural tendency to rise, and it must descend. It cannot expect yin to rise, because yin is not wise. It is only noose, N-O-O-S, that can understand that it must compensate against its own natural tendencies and do what is unnatural to it. Yin is, so to speak, thick, unthinking, not noose, and then he says noose is mind, but soma, which is body. Noose and soma, or psyche and soma, are the total universe organism. Descending into the yin realm is a sacrifice on yang's part, which through its bright or wise nature, it realizes it must make. But it pays a great cost in terms of suffering, loss of memory and identity, abilities, faculties. It becomes pseudo-yin, literally disguised in the yin realm as if it were actually yin, even to the point of forgetting that it is not. This is the agony we face here in this irreal and dense yin realm. We yang traces. This is not our home. We are voluntarily exiles here, alienated and alone, violating our own natures for salvific purposes, a necessary purpose. Yin would not understand this. And until anamnesis sets in for us, anamnesis is his word for self-realization, we in our distress do not understand the reason either. Eventually, it will be real to us. Meanwhile, we ache with longing for our proper home, dimly remembered, but deeply felt for. Thus, we suppose we are being punished, as it feels like punishment, and we make the error of assuming we have sinned. On the contrary, we have renounced joy now to produce greater joy later for the good of all creation. We are the Godhead itself suffering the need to be what it is not, to ensure the ultimate stability of Crassus, or the unity of love. Let any Christian reject this. Let him now read the fourth gospel in connection with this and see the similarities. And moral. I got a couple minutes. It is the ethical requirement placed on the Yang traces by their own bright nature to abandon their natural tendency to rise to escape what is heavy and dark and sinking. For they must go in pursuit of the falling part of the cosmos for the benefit of those and that which otherwise would be lost. This is the highest law, to violate one's own nature for another's good, and the most difficult and painful law to fulfill. Because of this need, there is distress in the cosmos, distress for the innocent especially. My cosmology simply presents it as a fact. To escape it, we would have to allow the cosmos to decompose. Could we do that? The tragedy is that by the very nature of the sacrifice we make, we are blocked from knowing why. This is part of our sacrifice. Our Yang understanding, we must take on the dullness of Yin to save the cosmos. We sacrifice the knowledge of why we sacrifice and assume guilt, spurious guilt in its place. This is asking a lot, but consider who we really are, or once were and will be again. Who else can do it? There is no one else. There is only Yin, which does not know. The part of the organism that knows must help the part that doesn't know. But here we go. Get through it, Wid. But this means abandoning its own knowing. It becomes what it helps, a deceitful, a dreadful irony, one that hurts, but it is only temporary, just a little while, and then we go home for all eternity. That's it. Let me see here. We got a very short moment here, but I'll unmute you.
All callers are unmuted.
I'd just like to say that, you know, this to me really contradicts the idea that we were, you know, created, some people put out, we were created by the Anunnaki, you know, like from ape men or something, and advanced. And I've always felt that we were more, used to be spiritually advanced beings that would have been dumbed down. So I'm more on that side.
Okay. Well, you know what? I'll bet you we could have a long discussion about it. And but we don't have time. So maybe another time. Anyone else want to make a comment?
That's great.
Pardon me?
That was great. I like that.
Yeah.
Another a good movie that was based on one of his books is The Adjustment Bureau.
Uh-huh.
Everybody should watch that. Pretty neat.
Yeah. Did anyone have an aha experience while I was reading it?
I think I did. The sentence I referred to is, eventually will be revealed to us. Meanwhile, we ache with longing for our proper home, dimly remembered but deeply felt for. I've felt that.